I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon, first woman rabbi in a congregation in Israel and the winner of the 2013 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for work on behalf of the Jewish people. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and from our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. As you may already know by now, in case you haven't been sleeping for the last couple weeks, a little over a week ago, the Arizona legislature, in all of its wisdom, passed a bill called SB 1062, which essentially permitted businesses and other organizations located in our great state to discriminate on the basis of religious beliefs. The focus of the protests against that measure have come, by and large, because it was designed to permit entities in Arizona to refuse to serve customers or clients on the basis of their sexual orientation, permitting legal discrimination against gays, lesbians, and others. As wrong as this is, the even greater danger is that it puts the state firmly in the position of supporting bias against an identified group. And that is simply not an American or Arizonan place to be. My friends, there are definitely times when I am very proud to be an Arizonan, and especially a Jewish Arizonan. There have been Jews in this region since hidden Jews, conversos, came through here with the Spaniards. From our earliest days, there have been Jewish settlers, and we have been miners and cowboys, peddlers and shop owners, sheriffs and mayors, developers and even outlaws. We've been part of the fabric of Arizona throughout its history, and we continue to contribute in meaningful and important ways. I am proud of that. But there are also times when being a Jewish Arizonan is not as easy or filled with pride as it should be. The passage last week of that ridiculous bill by our state legislature that allowed businesses and other entities to discriminate against people on the basis of, well, almost anything as long as it came from a religious orientation, specifically seems to permit them to act with bias and refuse service to homosexual couples or individuals. Well, this is one of those times I'm not so proud. The truth is that in Genesis, the Bible tells us we are all created B'Tselem Elohim, in God's image, no matter what the Arizona legislature in Phoenix has decided. This is surely a matter of human decency and dignity, of representing God here in our own state. As a Jew and a rabbi, I must protest and urge you to do so as well. There's no Jewish justification and no ethical justification to legally endorse discrimination. Simply put, it's wrong, and we are commanded to stand up for what is right, which means protesting what is not. In a funny way, this bill, SB 1062, is distinctly not a Western thing to do. We here in the West believe that people have a right to be as odd as they wish, to hold their own beliefs, to do at home what they want to do. The Southwest is an open land, and our Arizona is a state where we are allowed to reinvent ourselves as cowboys or ranchers, as wildcats or Jews, as hikers or bikers or anything we reasonably choose. It is not Arizonan to discriminate against people because of their sexual orientation. Freedom is in our soil and should be part and parcel of our way of life. Live and let live. Discrimination against any individual because of his or her own orientation or preference is simply wrong. It is not a religious requirement of any religion to so discriminate. It may begin with discrimination based on sexual orientation, but we all know that discrimination can also be religious, racial, linguistic, and cultural. And claiming a religious mandate for discrimination does not change its essential character. SB 1062 damaged freedom, and as patriotic Arizonans, we should fight it. The governor should have vetoed it. Work to stop such discrimination, not protect it. Then we can all be proud of our state and the freedom for which it truly stands. What we need now in our society is healing, not discrimination. To play us in on this beautiful spring morning, at least here in Arizona where I live, it's beautiful, here's a lovely interpretation of one prayer for healing in Jewish tradition. Heal us now. El na rafa na la.
Rafa'enu Adonai v'nei rafa. Hoshienu v'nivashea. El karov l'chol korav, ach karov l're'av isho. We pray for healing of the body. We pray for healing of the soul, for strength of flesh, mind, and spirit. We pray to once again be whole. El na rifa na. Oh, please heal us now. Refuata nefesh, refuata.
That was the group Beged Kefet singing Heal Us Now. You know, my friends, discrimination is a slippery slope. Lutheran pastor Martin Niemöller, the famed German anti-Nazi theologian, said it best in his poem First They Came, published just after the Holocaust. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. In Arizona in 2014, we can paraphrase Niemöller and say, first they discriminated against the immigrants, and I did not speak out because I was not an immigrant. Then they discriminated against those who spoke Spanish, and I did not speak out because I was not Hispanic. Then they discriminated against gays and lesbians, and I did not speak out because I was not gay or lesbian. And then they discriminated against me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. Speaking out for freedom, human respect, and equity in our society is not a luxury. It's a necessity for the preservation of that freedom and human respect and equity. And it's the responsibility of every American to do so. As Pirkei Avot, the ethics of our ancestors in the Mishnah says, if not now, when? Well, now would be a really good time. When we come back on To Jewish, we'll visit with Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon of Congregation Yozma in Modin, Israel, the very first woman rabbi to serve a congregation in Israel and the winner of the 2013 Kohan Foundation Memorial Award for Jewish Education and Rescue. Meet her when we return on To Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon of Kehilat Yozma in Modin in Israel. She was the first
woman rabbi in a congregation in Israel, and is this year's recipient of the Kohan Foundation Award for some of the work that she has been doing at Modena, that the congregation has been doing as well. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you had to remind me that you were one of my early guests. I feel like my senility is setting in. It's great to have you back, but Modena has changed a lot. You know, you were at the time you had just gotten land, I think. You hadn't really built.
That's correct.
The gun. You had school going. Tell us in a minute or so the great change that's taken place for you and for Modena, but also for Reform Judaism in Israel.
In 1 minute, all of
all
that?
Right.
First of all,
take 2 minutes.
First of all, we have now, we are high functioning with 4 preschool classrooms, with 2 kindergarten classrooms, and an elementary school that goes from the first grade, right from kindergarten right through the 6th grade. We've graduated 2 classes so far, and we are building, right as I speak, our elementary school. For the first time, we had been hosted in 6 different schools over the last 8 years, and it's really wonderful progress, as well as the fact that we now function out of, we have our own synagogue, and I will tell you more about that.
The fight, really, to establish progressive Judaism and Reform Judaism in Israel has been a long fight. Do you think it's being won at this point?
I don't know if it's a matter of being won, but we have made enormous inroads. It won't be won until the vast majority of the Jews that define themselves as secular embrace Reform Judaism openly, freely, and proudly. We're not there yet. But I think Modena is a wonderful example of how secular Jews have become taking more and more responsibility for defining their own religious Jewish identity.
You know, it's always such a surprise to American Jews, not if they've been careful listeners of Too Jewish, of course, but the notion of a chiloni, a secular Jew in Israel, is a whole lot like what we might even think of as a religious reform Jew in America.
I like to say that Jews, secular Jews in Israel, they are psychologically Orthodox, but in practice they are very close to Reform Jews. And what do I mean by that? I mean that they will light Shabbat candles, they will have Kiddush, and then they'll go to the soccer game the next day.
Right. In Modena they go to the soccer game, in Tel Aviv they go to the beach.
Right. They make Jewish choices. They make Jewish choices in their lives, and which is very much
what we do as Reform Jews.
The difference is that they still think, though, that the authentic way of being Jewish is Orthodox. And their litmus test of what it means to be religious is Orthodoxy, even if it's Orthodoxy that they reject and they don't accept into their own lives. So it makes for a dichotomy. And it also makes for secular Jews who say, well, I'm not religious, even though they'll say the blessings on the Hanukkah candles, and they'll hold a Pesach Seder,
of course.
And
fast on Yom Kippur.
And some of them will
maybe
fast.
Maybe build a sukkah even.
Right, but they will not declare themselves as being religious. So it's kind of an uphill battle, because you're fighting a psychological barrier.
A cultural barrier,
and it's not an easy barrier to fight. But it has to, like anything, you need vision, and you need patience, and you need time to see it through.
Look forward to returning with Rabbi Kinner Shiryon, the winner of the Kohan Foundation Award for this year, when we return on Too Jewish.
Among my most pleasant, at least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my own grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the totality of the Jewish people. This service can involve any one of 4 different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know of anyone who might qualify for the 2013 Kohan Award, just visit our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, and you'll find the nomination form to submit. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's CohanAward.com, CohanAward. It's a good visit.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have 3 stores. We're opening a 4th in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or a kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's toojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us. The Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for June 11th to June 23rd of this year, 2014. If you're interested in going with me on this fantastic journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat, to the Sea of Galilee, to Jerusalem itself, please email toojewishradio18@gmail.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. We welcome Rav Ivy Nah in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in southern Arizona. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Good morning, Rabbi.
The peace process, or the Israeli-Palestinian negotiation process that Secretary of State John Kerry initiated, looked at first like it had no chance to do anything. I don't think anybody, or very few people, believed it had any potential to have any success. There hasn't been a peace process since Bush was president, and that was not even at the end of his term. So 5, 6, 7 years, it seems like. Now it seems to be gaining traction and some surprising things are happening. What do Israelis think about this process? What do you think about the process?
This time I will focus on what I'm thinking, if it's okay. And first, I believe and I hope that this will lead for a new breakthrough. I think it's a tipping point, and I think that some of the leaders and actually all the parties feels that we can't move on like this forever. You know, we're 66. We are, you know, get older. We need to move on to the new phase. And even I was use this term, get used to that we have a neighbors and we better be live with peace with them and not continue, you know, fighting forever. And this is my own personal. I don't know if I would say political, but this is my approach. And in general, I really, really look forward to see a peace in Israel, I would say, and in the Middle East. And I know that we pay a lot, and we pay a lot to be in this, you know, in this phase. And you know that I know what I'm talking about when I say we pay a lot. I lost my father in a terror attack, and I've never give up the dream of, you know, and I. was part of a promoting piece with Jordanian women. So it's really, as a family and myself, we did a lot, and we will never will give up the dream and the hope that we will have peace with our neighbors. And yeah.
It has been, I think, one of the really powerful elements within Israel from its beginning, that there was always a great belief in peace.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing now things we never thought we would necessarily see. Bibi Netanyahu seems to be moving to the left a little bit on peace. We'll see. As prime minister, we're seeing fractures within the coalition, and I think those only happen when people think there might actually be the potential for a peace settlement. If you were to make odds, if you were to say, what's the percentage chance that something will emerge in the next 2 or 3 years, what would you think it would be?
Very high.
From your mouth to God's ears,
yeah.
We say.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ashrat. We'll talk next week. When we come back on To Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been exploring the phenomenon of contemporary anti-Semitism in Europe, not, 60 years ago, but right now. And you were talking last week about the economic conditions that have created a large unemployed group, sometimes 20-25% of the young people in France, Germany, Spain, really all around Europe. How does that fuel contemporary anti-Semitism?
Well, as I said last week, it doesn't fuel only anti-Semitism. It fuels dissatisfaction with the government. It fuels a desire to seek scapegoats. Why don't I have a job? Whose fault is it? And there is a deep-seated tradition in Western Europe, particularly in countries that are predominantly Catholic or that have significant Catholic regions. Like Germany is not overwhelmingly Catholic, but two-thirds of Germany is. And this basically goes back to at least the 4th century when history was rewritten. The Roman Empire converted to Christianity, it became the state religion, and blame had to be shifted from the Romans onto someone else for the killing of somebody who was now considered, after the Council of Nicaea, to be God, namely Jesus. So that the killing of Jesus was pinned on the Jews in a classic example of historic revisionism, something that everyone prior to the 4th century knew was done by the Romans. But after the 4th century, many Christians around the world believed that it was done by Jews, and this gave them a reason to hate us and persecute us. And by the end of the 4th century, there were very famous, influential church leaders, like St. Ambrose, the patron saint of Milano, who openly advocated the destruction of Jewry. And they said that the destruction of Jewry should be the common cause of both the state and the church. And even this guy, St. Ambrose, who was quite influential.
He's one of the patristic fathers, one very important church leader.
So he wrote a letter to the Pope at the end of the 4th century saying that the cause of religion must always be more important than maintaining civil law and order, because there was a certain amount of tolerance for Jews and intolerance of violence against them, because the primary traditional Roman value was maintaining law and order and public tranquility and not disturbing the peace. And obviously pogroms and attacks against Jews, even if they were only verbal, were a way of disturbing the peace. So as power shifted away from the state and to the church, particularly in Western Europe, with the ultimate disintegration of the western half of the Roman Empire and the descent of all of Western Europe into what used to be called the Dark Ages and is now called the Early Middle Ages, the attack against the Jews and considering the destruction of the Jews, or at least their subjugation and being kept in a very miserable position at the far margins of society, became part of the Western mainstream. And that has never been completely extirpated from the Western European consciousness, or in fact from the subtexts of many Catholic institutions in Europe.
We can talk more about how that relates today. It does seem to me that there's somehow anti-Semitism in the very soil of Europe at this point. But we'll talk some more next
week. Right, but we know specifically where it comes from.
Exactly. So. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. One day in the woods, a Jewish hiker sees a giant grizzly bear. The bear sees him, too, and starts to chase him. The guy manages to stay ahead for a while, but the bear finally corners him. Giving up all hope, knowing he is about to be eaten, the terrified hiker begins to chant the Shema, the last words a Jew says before death, Shema Yisrael! To his shock, the grizzly bear stops right in front of him, and then the bear begins to recite Hebrew. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the world. The man is overjoyed. What were the odds he'd be chased by a Jewish bear? God is so gracious. How lucky he is. He's going to live. And then the hiker hears the bear's final words. Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Thank you, God, who brings us food to eat. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin the middle book of the Torah, Leviticus. The Hebrew name for this book comes from its first word, Vayikra, God called. There's a famous idiosyncrasy about the Aleph, the last Hebrew letter in the word Vayikra, as it's written in the Torah, because it's much smaller than the other letters. Aleph, the Midrash tells us, is the first letter of the word Ani, I. Therefore, if we wish God to call us directly, we have to diminish our focus on the I, seek to limit our egotism. If we can do that, then we, like Moses, will be able to clearly hear God's call, to respond, and so to find the holiness that makes up the central subject of the book of Leviticus. Less of the I, and so more of God. A very nice interpretation indeed. But there's something rather puzzling about this midrash as well. If Moses, our great leader, was truly the humblest man of the world, just how did he have the ego strength to lead an enormously fractious group of Jews across a wilderness to the promised land, often against their will? How could anyone so humble and modest manage to lead such a people through all the trials and tribulations described in the Torah? Perhaps the secret lies in the inner strength that can come only from faith. Faced with the vicissitudes of life and the challenges and demands of a world that is far from completion or wholeness, our own arrogance cannot carry us to any promised land we might seek. But trust in a God who implants within each of us a spark of the divine, a core element of holiness that we can draw upon at times of crisis, can bring us to a better place. Moses realized that he himself was really unfit for the task God assigned him, and so he was indeed humble. But he also knew that the God he believed in and whose mitzvot he followed was infinitely powerful and profoundly holy. If he, a fallible human being, simply placed his confidence and trust in God, he would ultimately succeed. So, too, for us. We can't really do it alone, however we define it. But if we place our faith in God and know that God can and will help, we, too, may become like Moses, humble yet holy. Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon was the first woman rabbi to serve a congregation in Israel, but more than that pioneering experience, she and her congregation, Kehilat Yozma in Modin, Israel, have made a powerful difference in the Jewish world by giving physically and mentally challenged young people the opportunity to pray, learn, and experience Jewish community regularly and meaningfully. For this work, she's been awarded the 2013 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. Find out how she does this work and what it means to liberal Judaism in Israel when we return on To Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
World's oldest Holocaust survivor, Alice Hertz Sommer, died last week at the age of 110 in London. Hertz Sommer, a pianist born in Prague, was the subject of a documentary, The Lady in Number 6, Music Saved My Life, which is nominated for an Oscar this year.
Every day in life is beautiful. Every day. It's beautiful.
Young people take everything for granted, whereas we, the elderly, understand nature, Hertz Sommer said in an interview when she was only 106 years old. What I have learned at my advanced age is to be grateful that we have a nice life. There is electricity, cars, telegraph, telephone, internet. We also have hot water all day long. We live like kings. I even got used to the bad weather in London, she said. Hertz Sommer discovered a love for music at the age of 3. Her family home in Prague was also a cultural salon where writers, scientists, musicians, and actors congregated, among them Franz Kafka, the famous writer whom she remembered well. Kafka was a strange man, she recalled. He used to come to our house, sit and talk with my mother, mainly about writing. We frequently went on trips together. I remember Kafka took us to a very nice place outside Prague. We sat on a bench. He told us stories. He was an excellent writer with a lovely style, the kind you read effortlessly, she said, and now hundreds of people all over the world research and write doctorates about him. When World War I broke out, she was 11 years old. 5 years later, she enrolled in the German Music Academy in Prague. She was the youngest pupil. Within a short time, she became one of the city's most famous pianists, and in the early 30s was also known throughout Europe. Max Brod, the man who published Kafka, recognized Sommer's talent and reviewed her for newspapers. In 1931, she married Leopold Sommer, also a musician. 6 years later, their only son, Raphael, was born. In 1939, the Nazis invaded Czechoslovakia. They forbade Jews to perform in public, and she stopped holding concerts or participating in music competitions. At first, she was still able to make a living giving piano lessons, but when the Nazis forbid Jews to teach non-Jews, she lost most of her pupils. Everything was forbidden. We couldn't buy groceries, take the tram, go to the park. In 1942, the Germans arrested her sick mother, Sophie, who was 72. and subsequently murdered her. That was catastrophe, Summers said. The bond between mother and child is something special. I loved her so much, but an inner voice told me from now on you alone can help yourself, not your husband, not the doctor, not the child. At that moment, I knew I had to play Frédéric Chopin's 24 Etudes, which are the greatest challenge for any pianist. It's like Goethe's Faust or Shakespeare's Hamlet. I ran home, and from that moment on, I practiced for hours and hours, until they forced us out. In 1943, Summer was sent to Theresienstadt concentration camp along with her husband and son, who was then 6 years old. The Nazis allowed Jews to maintain a cultural life there, to present a false impression to the world that the Jewish inmates were receiving proper treatment. We had to play because the Red Cross came 3 times a year, she remembered. The Germans wanted to show its representatives that the situation of the Jews in Theresienstadt was good. Whenever I knew that I had a concert, I was happy. Music is magic. We performed in the council hall before an audience of 150 old, hopeless, sick, and starving people. They lived for the music. It was like food to them. If they hadn't come, they would have died long before, as we would have. In September 1944, her husband Leopold was sent to Auschwitz. He survived there, but died of illness at Dachau shortly before the war ended. His departing words to her at Theresienstadt saved her life, said Summer. One evening he came and told me that 1,000 men would be sent on a transport the following day, himself included. He made me swear not to volunteer to follow him. People were told there was a transport the next day of wives following in their husbands' footsteps. Many wives volunteered, but they never met their husbands. They were murdered. If my husband hadn't warned me, I would have gone. In May of 45, the Soviet army liberated Theresienstadt. 2 years later, Summer and her son immigrated to Palestine, where they were reunited with her surviving family. I don't hate the Germans, Summer declared. What they did was a terrible thing. But was Alexander the Great any better? Evil has always existed. It always will. It is a part of our life. For almost 40 years, Summer lived in Israel, teaching music at a conservatory in Jerusalem. That was the best period in my life, she recalls. I was happy. In 1986, Summer followed her son, a cellist, and his family to London. She continued to play and teach. Until her death last week, she devoted 3 hours a day to practicing classical piano. When asked in 2006, when she was 103 years old, what the secret of her longevity was, Alice Hertz Summer answered, "In a word, optimism. I look at the good. When you are relaxed, your body is always relaxed. When you are pessimistic, your body behaves in an unnatural way. It is up to us whether to look at the good or the bad. When you are nice to others, they are nice to you. When you give, you receive." She also said, "My recommendation is not to eat a lot, but also not to go hungry. Fish or chicken and plenty of vegetables." When asked whether she was afraid of dying, she replied, "Not at all. No, I was a good person. I helped people. I was loved. I have a good feeling." May that feeling continue always through her story and her music. Alice Hertz Summer, the oldest Holocaust survivor, is gone now at the age of 110. The newest technology star, WhatsApp, grew up in Silicon Valley, but its founder, Jan Koum's Jewish background in Eastern Europe, gave it its Russian-Jewish DNA. The messaging company, bought by Facebook for $19 billion in a deal last week, has become a global force. It has 450 million customers who find it's an easy way to send messages across borders and between different brands of mobile devices. WhatsApp allows users all around the world to text essentially for free. It is used daily by about 75% of all Israelis, for example, and has become a standard way to communicate when traveling. WhatsApp founder and CEO Jan Koum, who is 37, grew up mostly in the Ukraine, moved in Mountain View, California as a teenager, an immigrant path reminiscent of other Silicon Valley successes like Max Levchin, the Ukrainian-born co-founder of PayPal, or Google's Russian-born co-founder, Sergey Brin. Like technology titans Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, Koum dropped out of college, but in his case, it was just San Jose State and not Harvard. Unlike Gates, who grew up in a wealthy family in Palos Verdes, California, or Zuckerberg, the son of middle-class Jews in New Jersey, Coombs' Soviet Jewish immigrant parents had no financial resources when they got to America. In fact, Coombs used to pick up food stamps quite close to his company's current Silicon Valley location. Coombs' Ukrainian background was key to WhatsApp's creation, unlike companies like Google and Facebook, which try to learn as much as possible about each user. WhatsApp does not collect personal information such as name, gender, or age. Messages are deleted from servers as soon as they are delivered. This is a decidedly contrarian approach shaped by Jan Coombs' experience growing up in a communist country with secret police. His childhood made him appreciate communication that was open and not bugged or taped. Coombs now has $19 billion to help him in whatever his next venture is. Mazel tov to Jan Coombs and to WhatsApp. The Jewish guy largely responsible for the movies Ghostbuster, Animal House, Stripes, Groundhog Day, and Caddyshack, as well as the National Lampoon Vacation films, is gone too young. Harold Ramis, whose irrepressible comic talent shone through as an author, actor, and director, died at the age of 69 last week. Ramis died from complications of the strange autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis disease, a rare one that involves swelling of the blood vessels. A Jewish kid from Chicago, in 2010, Harold Ramis began having health problems following an infection, which ultimately caused his rare condition and early death. Ramis was a huge comic influence in Hollywood. He had a streak of hits, stretching from the 1978 classic Animal House that he wrote, to 1984's blockbuster Ghostbusters, which he wrote and starred in, all the way up to 1999, his hit Analyze This, and the follow-up in 2002, Analyze That, which he wrote and directed as well. Ramis' roots in humor date back to his college years. He wrote parodies for the stage then. After graduating, he moved back to Chicago in the early 70s, sharing the stage at Second City with John Belushi and other fellow collaborators, and started the skit comedy show SCTV. In 1974, Harold Ramis, John Belushi, and Bill Murray moved to New York with other performers from that famed Chicago comedy troupe to do the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
German? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now!
Ramis' big screen break came when he wrote the 1978 frat house comedy Animal House, starring John Belushi. From there, Ramis also wrote 79's Meatballs, starring his creative collaborator Bill Murray. Their team-ups included Caddyshack, Ghostbusters, Groundhog Day, and Stripes.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Harold Ramis' signature style mixed both ludicrous and insightful humor. He's had a lasting influence on directors and actors throughout Hollywood, from Judd Apatow to Adam Sandler to the Farrelly brothers. Harold Ramis, another Jewish comedy genius, gone too soon. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Kinneret Shiryon of Kehilat Yozma in Modin, a city midway between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Neither a bedroom community of either, but maybe also a bedroom community of both at times, who was the first woman rabbi in a congregational setting in Israel and has built a remarkable community, including one that deals with some special needs cases. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Welcome, and Mazel Tov on winning the Kohan Foundation Award this year.
Thank you very much. I am very excited and very gratified that we have won the award.
We were talking earlier in the show about the vibrance and the different ways that people come into a Reform congregation, a Reform synagogue in Israel. Let's talk about the social justice work that has been a hallmark of what you've done at Kehilat Yozma. It's important for all Reform synagogues, I think, all around the world. But really, what you've done in Modin is very special. Can you describe that program?
I can. I think I'll start with the Yozman program, which is a program every Sunday. The synagogue is transformed into a very exciting, loud, noisy, yet orderly balagan in the in the main sanctuary. All the chairs are pushed aside. We open up tables. Around the tables sit children, over approximately 100 children. Not all of them fit into our small synagogue space. Some of them we have enclosed the back porch, and they sit back there.
So
there are several
the
tables.
And
they
inside.
Are in two of our preschool classes.
Right.
And we have 70 volunteers that come and sit with them and give them private tutoring. These are children who cannot afford private tutoring. We work with the social services of the city who identify the families that are looking for this kind of help, and then they come to us. And we have a volunteer. Her name is Gabi Dolev. She is 70 years young, and she takes logistics of matching a tutor with a teacher. The teachers range in ages from retired teachers, grandparents, to bar and bat mitzvah students who have taken on as their mitzvah project to help these children and high school students. It's really quite amazing. So
fantastic.
Children are learning. We have children who are learning to improve their skills in English, which is taught in the schools, and they have difficulty. Mathematics, biology, chemistry, history, whatever it is where they're having difficulty, we help them close the gap of those learning difficulties. The children are committed. They come every week. They come enthusiastically. It's like this huge Beit Midrash. There's a lot of noise going on.
Mm-hmm.
People coming in, coming out. It runs from 4 in the afternoon till 7:30 at night. And we have to straddle the time so that we can fit everybody in at all these different times. And that happens once a week. And it has changed the lives for these children. We have testimonies at the end of the year where the parents and the children talk about how it has helped them. In some cases, a child who has been ostracized because he's not doing well, and rather than going into that loop of I don't do well, I can't do well, I can't get ahead, I'm not accepted as part of the class, and I'm pushed aside, what happens is they slowly start gaining confidence, and that confidence spills over in their social skills. It spills over in their ability to improve, and it empowers them, and then they become more popular and they become more accepted. It's really quite extraordinary to see that happen.
It's a wonderful program, and of course they couldn't find or afford that kind of tutoring in the school systems in Israel.
That's correct. Private tutoring in Israel costs about 180 shekel an hour.
Right.
And that's expensive for these families. They can't afford it.
Speaking of those on the margins of society, Yozma, your congregation has had a remarkable program, extraordinary, I would say, working with students at a school in Ramla. Can you describe that program?
Yes.
And how it evolved and how important it is now?
We adopted a boarding school called Beit Eden. And it is a school that takes children from the
age...
Kind
of an ironic name in a way.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
House of Eden.
But it's giving them Eden in a way that they wouldn't have had if they had to stay within their families who could not help them in the way that the Beit Eden does help them. They're between 3-year-olds through 18-year-olds, and sometimes they stay a little bit later until they can find housing as adults with special... These are children with special needs.
And a wide range of disabilities?
Wide range of disabilities. Some of them have Down syndrome. Some of them are CP. Some of them suffer from autism, severe autism. Some of them have combinations. And these children, we go once a week, and we do a Kabbalat Shabbat ceremony with the kids on Friday afternoons. In Israel, Friday afternoons is sacred time. People are either taking... long-needed naps, or they are running around shopping and
getting ready for
Shabbat, cooking and preparing, cleaning. And they give up this time, and they go every week, and they bring joy and love to this Kabbalat Shabbat ceremony for these kids. And the kids just look forward to greeting us every week. They say, oh, look, Hadatiim ba'im, hadatiim ba'im.
The religious ones are coming. Yeah. Religious ones are coming.
The religious ones, and they know that it's Yozma, and they They know that we are their extended family. We also bring them in for poem celebrations, for our tashlik ceremonies. And it's important on both ends, because it's not just giving these children an opportunity to celebrate with us and our community, but it exposes our young people to these population groups, and that they are part of our life, and they are integral to our life and into our community.
We would call it mainstreaming here.
Yes, we would call it mainstreaming, and that's so important, and for both sides.
In creating Yozma, which means initiative, really, in creating Yozma, did you have a goal of it being a large Reform congregation, or just seeing what would happen?
When I created Yozma, I looked at it as a Jewish community center and synagogue. I wanted to be a place of learning. I wanted to be a place of gathering. I wanted to be a place where we can make an impact on the city itself through our social justice projects, and we have many. And all that said, I did not believe that we would be small. To have that many people involved in the various programs that we have, then you need to grow, and you need to be able to embrace that growth. And we have over 700 families who are involved in the daily life of Yozma. Of those 700 families, there are only 250 that actually pay dues. Paying dues to a synagogue in Israel is something that is...
alien concept.
Yes, a very alien concept. It has to do with education. You have to educate. And slowly we are educating, slowly we're having our impact, and I think that's the key to your question earlier, that we are making enormous inroads, the Reform movement in the country. We do it on budgets that are not always large enough to fulfill the dreams that we have, but we have learned to maneuver in a country where most of the funding goes to Orthodox communities, and we have learned to work the system, whether it is through legal action, mostly through legal action,
mostly,
so that
right.
we can set precedents and to make changes, but also to influence the politicians in ways that, if we can. And I think if we continue along those roads, and I also believe that in Israel there is a new openness for learning about your Jewish religious roots and not just your cultural and national identity in the country. And there are a lot of learning centers, a lot of batei midrash, secular batei midrash that are
right.
taking place that are very popular. And that's a wonderful thing, because it means that finally Israeli Jews who are not Orthodox are taking ownership
of
their Judaism and right. of their Jewish identity.
It's a remarkable thing. Rabbi Shiryon, mazel tov.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the wonderful work you do. And we hope to keep checking back.
I think we should.
And visiting you in Israel. By the way, you can visit. And what's the website for Kehilat Yozma?
It's Yozma, Y-O-Z-M-A, at yozma.org.il.
Great. Thank you again, and continued success. Mazel tov on winning the Cohen
Thank
Foundation.
Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure being with you this morning.
My pleasure, Kinner. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Rabbi Brad Somson, talking about the new B'nai Mitzvah revolution. Catch it. Our playout this morning comes from Danny Maseng. It's his Elohai Nitzor. My God, may I remain calm in spite of the slanders thrown my way, and may I seek peace. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Time it up, and it's
Ben achi ki apal kol ti eloha.